You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to our first episode of season two of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And today we have with us the winner of a record-breaking 6 Tony Awards, 2 Grammy Awards, and an Emmy Award.
She was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People of 2015 and received a 2015 National Medal of Arts, America's highest honor for achievement in the arts, from President Barack Obama.
We are kicking off season 2 with none other than Audra McDonald.
I know, I'm so excited.
Welcome back, you guys. We are so excited to kick off season 2 with none other than the Queen Bey of the Broadway herself. Y'all, Audra McDonald is here.
She is here with us.
Applause. I'm doing the canned applause with myself. Yeah. Welcome, Audra.
And thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Of course. It's a pleasure. And you know, I think you guys are awesome, and you're out there kicking booties as mamas and performers, and just to have a podcast like this or something that sort of keeps us in solidarity is a great thing. It makes you feel a little saner.
We hear that.
Yeah. We could all use a little bit of sanity right now, huh?
Yeah,
for sure.
So we always kick off our episodes by asking our guests about their children. We think it's something we never get asked in our industry about, and so that's what we like to lead with. So tell us about your daughters.
My daughters. Well, my 19-year-old is in her sophomore year. She just started her sophomore year of college yesterday, which is crazy. And she's doing it online. You know, because that's where we are right now. She didn't want to live in our house. So we have a crash pad in the city. So she and a couple of her other friends from her university decided they would all live together in our crash pad in the city so that they could get a little sort of sense of, you know, being away from home. And having a college experience. And I don't blame them. I moved, you know, across the country. I moved from Fresno, California, all the way to New York to go to college. And, you know, they really are being robbed of a college experience right now. So I was kind of all for it. You know, I really wanted them to, I wanted her to have some sort of semblance of autonomy and a bit of freedom. Mm-hmm. And the great or maybe not great thing is, because she was like, I got to get out of here. I got to have this space. Girl has texted me more times in the past week. I'm like, Jack, you wanted out. What's going on?
They think they want out. And then they get out and they realize, oh, my mom really knows all the things.
Really, literally like last night, Will had just gotten home from work and we get a text from Zoe. And then she calls. Whenever she calls, I'm like, oh God, because kids, they don't call. It's text or nothing. So when she calls, you're like, what's going on? And she calls, she's like, Mom, it's completely dark. She's FaceTiming. I mean, like, why is it dark in the apartment? What's going on? She's like, this light bulb has gone out and we don't know how to. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, just find a lamp somewhere and
light a candle.
Yeah. Or not. And burn the place down. True. But you know, you go through that mama sort of like, what was wrong? And it's like, the light bulb, you know, but I don't need you. I'm like, uh-huh, okay, fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, she's good. She's good. And she's having her time. And then my 3-year-old is just, you know, it's a hard time for them too, you know, especially as we've all been quarantining and I have not sent her back to preschool. So she hasn't had any kids to play with her age. And that's been devastating and so hard on her. And we just got some new neighbors a couple days ago who have twin 4-year-olds. And when they said, oh my gosh, when they said we're not sending our kids to school and we're looking for a bubble or a pot, I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
I am so excited for you. I am so excited for you because same over here. Elliot doesn't have anyone. It's just us. And that's exhausting.
It's too much. Exhausting, you know, and it's not, I mean, you're, of course you're going to do anything for your kids, but it is so exhausting to like play with them in that mindset all day long because they're in that place where they want to, you know, pretend to be this and pretend to be that. And, you know, they're off in 500 different directions at once. And, We're old and we're tired.
It's like you're in a constant game of improv, but the person you're playing with is telling you you're doing it wrong. Like, I feel like my 3-year-old is like, no, it's not yes and. It's no, I'm doing it this way.
Exactly. It's like, wait a minute. I mean, and the line readings they give you, I'm like, we did, and especially me and Will were like, really? Did we give birth to a director?
Same. Oh my God. Sally and Elliot should just get together and like direct all the things.
Yeah. Oh, same. If you say it, she's like, no, say this. I'm like, well, I don't want to say that. She's like, you have to say it. It's like, oh, anyway. I'm speaking to the choir here. Y'all know.
I mean, I just love, it's like, little does she know, right? Our kids, like, little does she know who she's directing. She's like, Mom.
I don't care.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't. She's like, I see you in the morning before the coffee. Just do this for me.
Do it. And do it right, or I will tell you. I will tell you about yourself. That's the amazing. Mm-hmm. We also have 2 stepsons, and one is starting his junior year in high school. And half in school, half out of school. It's very weird. They're half online, half not. And then my other stepson has gone back down to college, but he's doing it online, but he's doing it in the summer.
So is your stepson, is the one in high school, is he with you guys? Or is he with
you? Yeah. He is not bi-coastal. What's the thing? Bi-coastal? Yeah, he's bi-coastal. Anyway, but thanks for asking about my kids. How are your kids? How's everybody doing?
Kara has had an improvement.
I've had a recent improvement. I have a 7-year-old daughter who's autistic, mm-hmm. and this was like the remote schooling that started in March was fairly brutal. And she has recently been able to go back to school. She's in a contained classroom. There's only 5 kids in her classroom. Yeah. And in our district, they are allowing those kids to go 5 days full day. Mm-hmm. And I feel safe. I know every other parent of every other child. We're all in constant communication. And so she is a different human. She's like a different kid. She's been in 3 days and she is a different kid. So, and I've had some relief from that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my husband and I joke, we also have almost 4-year-old. I think Finn and Sally Mae are really, Sally James, sorry, are very close in age.
Yeah.
He's going to be 4 at the end of October. And we always joke that it's almost like we have 2 only children because they can't really play together. Mm-hmm. Because my daughter doesn't really know how to play. She's getting there. Mm-hmm. So it was like, we had two kids that need such different things all the time. So I have recently had some relief, and I was just talking to Jessica about how guilty I feel. I feel so guilty because I know so many other moms are still struggling so much. And I've had like a moment of breath, and I have guilt. I have mom guilt.
You don't have guilt. I mean, congratulations and good for you and good for them and good. I mean,
it's good.
Find the joy wherever there is the joy. So that's
cool. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm living vicariously through you, Kara. So it's all.
And yes, you guys had a good, you had some playmates for the summer, but that's over now.
Well, we do. If we drive up to LA there, I mean, we're definitely in a pod with them. Like they're not playing with other people, but they're siblings. So we'll go up and do that. But we were just for the month, we were in Washington State with, her cousins. And what we're going to do actually is go back up for the entire holiday season for 6 weeks and live on their farm with them. And just like, I know it's, and the kids are 6, 4, and 2. And so, and Elliot just turned 6. So it's perfect. And you know, they have an indoor pool. It's really lovely. it feels like a vacation almost. So, you know, and meanwhile, she's learning to take care of chickens and they're getting goats and, but, and she has kids to play with and also homeschool with. So
that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. That'll be a great thing. But when we're here by ourselves in La Jolla and those first 5 months, whew, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot day in and day out. But you know what? I mean, we count our blessings where we have them and are trying to just be in the present moment, you know, until we can go back.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but, how about, I want to talk to you. So, okay. Backstory. Been wanting to talk to Audra for a while because you have such an, first off, there aren't a ton of mothers in our world, right? There are more than there used to be. Yeah. And since you do have a 19-year-old, you had a child in a time. I mean, this was, what was it, maybe 2000, I guess?
2000, yeah. She's been one. I got pregnant in 2000. She was born in 2001.
So I always find it interesting to talk to women who were in the business. I mean, this has only been in the last several years. I feel that there's been a shift in awareness and sort of it's not as taboo as it once was, even though I think that we still don't talk about our children a lot. But how is that to have children in such different places of your career? I mean, I know, you know, you'd already won a few Tonys at that point. And so, so you weren't like on the struggling side, but to look at it from two different perspectives, I've always wondered what it was like to have that space.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I had Zoe, I had won Tonys and I was, you know, somewhat established in my career, but, I was still at a point where I wasn't advocating for myself. I feel like I do now. And so in some ways I wasn't asking for things. And I also wasn't being led or being advised to ask for things. You just sort of dealt with things and figured them out, you know? I love my management. I love my agent and they've all been amazing, but you know, asking for what you need in dealing like with a contract or something like that. It was just sort of like, okay, I'll figure that out. You know, and also I didn't have a ton of friends around me that had a kid at that time. A lot of my friends in the business just didn't have kids. And a lot of them were very supportive and very helpful, but I just didn't have that much of a community. There's like two others that I can think of that had kids at that time of my friends. And so you feel a bit alone. I don't want to be dramatic and say not supported, but I look back on it now and you go, no, you're not, you're just figuring it out on your own, you know? Not thinking that you have the right to ask for certain things like that. Now we know absolutely. And why wouldn't that be considered? And, you know, things like for me starring in shows or having big roles in shows and sort of trying to advocate for saying, can we start at 11 and can we do a straight through day until 5? That way I've got time to get my kid to school, be with her for those few hours in the morning, then come into work, and then get home in time to put her to bed. But that whole 10 to 6 thing, especially if you lived out of the city or anything like that, for parents especially, it cuts into so much. And there's got to be a way that you can do both. Mm-hmm. You know, one friend I did have that, and she, it was interesting. Her kids are now 26 and 27, but she got pregnant when we were doing Carousel. Rebecca Eichenberger, do you guys know her?
Oh yeah.
Amazing Rebecca Eichenberger. Mm-hmm. And that was one friend I had who had had kids. And her oldest son was, I think, 8-9 months when we were doing Carousel. And I remember one morning at rehearsal going, oh gosh, it's just 10. And I don't think I can. I noped out. Like, honey, please. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, I've been up since 6:30. Right. And I just remember going, why? She's like, I got children. And just that first sort of response of, oh, and she's like, and you'll never sleep again. And that was but seeing her deal with it and just the force and the way she dealt with it and educated me. But then, so when I did finally come around and have kids, her kids were much older. So that was the one sort of soul voice I remember having in my ear at that time. That was it, you know.
Wow.
And her husband's is in the union and he worked with shows too. So that was, they had that security in that way that, you know, he at least understood what her career was about and was a part of the business as well. But it wasn't a lot of support then. It really wasn't.
No, I mean, I think that's something, I mean, it's not the same, but that's why we founded the Facebook group. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. we realized we didn't have a lot of support around us. We had each other, but right. thank goodness we had each other, you know? And so we thought there's gotta be women who, so many of us are staying in the business now and continuing to work and be right. working artist mothers. And I just think everything is so prehistoric with regard, you know, in the union and the rules and the things. And there are so many who don't have children that I think no matter what, like you can be a great friend and you can see the struggles, but until you are in this position, trying to balance it and try to find the ways, you can't possibly explain to someone what it means to miss the first day of school. You know what I mean? Like luckily, and I said this last season, you know, I was doing Tina and our stage manager is a mom and she was amazing. And I said, listen, it's Elliot's first day of school tomorrow. If I'm not going to be called all day. And she was like, what time does school start? And I told her, and then she asked me later on that day, she's like, when does school get out? And I told her, and mm-hmm. she scheduled me for the middle of the day.
Oh,
that's all it takes. And the difference it made in my mental state to be a part, you know, to think, oh, I was heard, my needs were heard, but I know it's because she's a mom.
Right.
Because goodness knows, I know companies who would have said, no, you're here 10 to 6, even if right. you're sitting on your ass over there, you know?
Right, 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 right. And the I think what people don't understand a lot of times is sort of like the emotional torture that you go through. Like when you're just sitting there thinking about the fact that I'm not going to be able to be there for her first day of school.
Yeah.
You know, and what is that going to do to my child? And the guilt you're feeling at the same time, it's like, but I got to work.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, right.
That's the other thing when people sort of, you know, sometimes I lost a few friends when I, my first couple of years of having Zoe, and it was friends that didn't really understand that I don't have time right now. I'm so sorry I didn't call you back, or I'm so sorry, especially this was before, you know, cell phones and all that stuff when I first had Zoe, or I'm so sorry that I can't go out with you after the show tonight for the sixth time that you've asked. And boy, do I wish I could. God, I would love to just like go out and get drunk and then sleep until 10 or 11 o'clock, but you can't, you just can't. There is a responsibility that you have. And then there's an emotional responsibility that you have. And I was just talking to Will about this last night. It's like, you know, I was starting to feel guilty. I'm like, maybe I haven't been that great of a friend to a lot of people. And he was like, well, you know, I'm sorry. You only have so much that you have to give, and you must give it to your family first. Mm-hmm. You know? And then whatever you have left over, then you can, you know, parse out as you see fit, but you know, what comes first is your family. And
so, those who are close to you will understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But I had to learn to let go and just go, okay, that,
Yeah. Especially right now.
Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking about it, especially during this time, because I think we all handle what's going on so differently. You know, we all deal with this stress and anxiety and the fear and everything that we're taking in, all the input. People handle it differently. Lots of people are like reaching out to everybody. I know me, I go inward and I know that I've let like a lot of things go through the cracks, but I also know that the people who love and care about me know that about me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the friends I still have. The ones where like, when you come up for air, we're here.
Yeah. And if they really needed you, I have no doubt you would be there in a second, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. But just to shoot the shit and like hang out on a Zoom, you're like, No, I don't have time.
And boy, but again, it's like, that would be great.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. I've actually had friends in the business who, once they had children, have actually said to me, I get it now. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I get it. Don't ever feel bad about not texting me back immediately after I sent you a text. Like, you know, so there is, for the people who do have this experience, they get there and understand. Right. I want to talk about the difference between having a child when you did and then now, besides the business, I feel like parent. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, right? How old you are when you had your first, how old you were when you had your second. I mean, you talk about it really openly. You were in perimenopause. You were doing 8 shows a week. You were tap dancing. Never in a million years did you think you were going to get pregnant. Right. So I'd love to talk about how that felt on your body, but I'm also curious. I feel like parenting in general has changed over that period of time.
Yeah.
And I want to know how that's been for you. Was it like riding a bike to have a baby again? Did your thoughts about parenting shift with Sally James, or was it?
I'll tell you what, in some ways they shifted, and some of that shift came from my older daughter watching me parent Sally James and guiding me in some ways that I kind of messed up with her.
Wow.
I have been so grateful for. I've been so grateful. I mean, you know, talk about the difference. I have one child born in 2001, another one born in 2016. So, I mean, so they were, you know, they're 15 years apart. So it is like having two only children. But my daughter has been able to guide me in ways that because certain things about parenting have changed, like, you don't force them to kiss someone if they don't want to. You don't say, go hug that person, go do it. You know, and so my daughter is as much of a police about that. Or if we tickle Sally and she doesn't want to be tickled, my daughter will say, listen to her, mom. She's saying, don't touch me. You know, and it's different if you're trying to protect her from something like that. But if she's saying, I don't want to be tickled, you need to listen to that, because she needs to learn that she has control over her body.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And my other things, like, I was raised to call, you know, when I was a little kid, it was a, you know, my grandmother called the vagina your possible. So we called it your possible. So So I taught that to my 19-year-old. Well, not when she was 19, but, and she was, I remember when Sally was starting to speak, mom, she was like, mom, call it a vagina. She needs to know what it is. So if God forbid something happened, and I was like, and I know all these things were coming down the pike, but that she was so aware of all that. Okay. The other thing that I pass on to anybody that I can think of now is the one thing that my daughter, and please, I'm not literally relying on my, but it's just because they're in a different generation. As she said to me one night, she said, mom, I said, oh my gosh, just my butt, it's so big. And she said, mom, you know what? I love you so much. And I think your body is beautiful. She said, but in watching you over all these years tear down your own body, that taught me to do that to myself. And she's like, so I know.
That makes me cry.
I could cry.
Like, please don't do that for Sally's sake. Sally's got a beautiful body, and my daughter has a beautiful body. And I've always said, Zoe, you're beautiful. Your body is beautiful. You're strong. You're healthy. I've always done that. She's like, it doesn't matter what you said to me about my body, because I've watched what you said about your body in front of me. And so that's something that I'm learning to be like, okay, that's right. That's right. You know, I'm going to be healthier.
Right.
Anything
stronger.
But I don't say anything bad about myself now, because. And I realized, and when she told me that, I started to look back at what I grew up hearing and understand what my mother grew up hearing. And yeah. So my daughter in some ways is helping me sort of like break the cycle on a lot of stuff, which I'm so grateful for.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, we always say, you know, they're listening and they really are listening. And, you know, just the little asides that we even say.
That's what they're listening more to than we realize.
Oh my gosh.
They're learning how to treat themselves based on how you treat yourself. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So it's been like sort of the major thing. And then the other issue with, you know, the parenting in 2016 as opposed to 2001 and being 30 as opposed to being 50 is I'm just tired. So a lot of stuff that I used to stress out about with Zoe, I'm like, you know, I mean, like Sal just decorated the entire couch the other day. And I just went, I mean, with, you know, Sharpie.
Markers, right?
Well, the couch looks different now. Whatever. You know, she drew on the wall and we did for a while. We just sort of like put a little frame around it, you know. So I'm less stressed about that stuff anymore because it's just, we got other shit to worry about, you know, in the world right now. I'm not going to worry about on the couch anymore. So in that sense, Sally's getting an easier version.
For sure.
We're going to take a really quick break right now, but don't go anywhere. We are going to be right back continuing this amazing conversation with Audra McDonald.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What was, Kara, you touched on this a second ago, but what was it? Okay. So I love the fact that you didn't think getting pregnant was even like a thing really that was going to happen. I mean, I can only imagine what it felt like when you realized that that was happening at what, 45, did you say? You were 45, wasn't that with you?
Yeah. I was 45 when I got pregnant. I was 46 when I had her.
Yeah. That's like, and then to be tap dancing and dancing. I mean, it's, you know,
I'm happy to tell these stories now. My life's pretty much always been a big open book. I don't care. But I had tried years before, you know, Will and I had tried to get pregnant and we had many losses. And so we gave up. And, you know, the doctors were just like, unless you do IVF, which we were not interested in doing, they were like, it's just not going to happen for you. You know, your egg's done. You're fried. I mean, we don't even think there's any eggs left. You know, you're going to have to either get a surrogate, you're going to have to get a donation, egg donation, wow. or major. They were like, I said, well, if I were to do IVF, they're like, we'd have to throw every medication in the book at you.
Wow.
So after like, you know, I think 4 miscarriages, we just gave up. We're like, okay, fine. We've got 3 wonderful children from, you know, and we're good. It's fine. So I signed on to do, and so a year went by from our last loss and I signed on to do the show and was, you know, everybody got sick during tech. You know how that always happens. Everybody's in the theater.
Yep.
Everybody got like the stomach virus and people were recovering from it. And I was like, are you still nauseous now? And they're like, oh, mine was only like 2 days.
Huh.
Still, And I'm literally going around asking everybody, going, did you? No, I'm better now. Mine was only like 20. I'm like, yeah. How'd you? I was like, yeah, but, and I just didn't think in a million years it would be that, you know, because of all the loss, and it had been a year since we'd given up. And so finally I was driving home one night and I was like, this is like the third time I have felt the need to pee. And it's only like a 45 minute drive. And I'd stopped. I was like, so I stopped at a drugstore on the way home and, you know, got that. and I was just like, oh, you're kidding me. You're kidding. Wow. And so then because of all the losses I'd had, I was like, well, not going to last.
Right.
So, you know, I let Will know and we were like, okay. So we just knew, you know, like we just expected that it wouldn't take.
And especially if you're tapping and you're dancing and you're stressing over opening a new show. I mean, that's a lot of.
Exactly. So cut to, I didn't say anything to anybody because I just didn't think it was going to last. And then so I'm in one of our previews one night. And really early in the pregnancy, I think I had like a bit of a week since I'd found out. And we'd gotten the, you know, you go to the doctor and you get the blood test and they do those numbers and they're like, yep. But she was again saying the numbers are a little low. You're probably going to lose this one. Okay, great. So I'm singing my 11 o'clock number one night on stage in previews and I completely started bleeding. Like was the beginning of a miscarriage. So I got off stage, called my doctor. And she said, yeah, it sounds like a miscarriage. And so I was devastated and emotional, but not surprised. And so she said, come in tomorrow, monitor it, make sure that the bleeding doesn't get too heavy. And it was just everywhere. So I went to the doctor the next day. And, you know, when they do the ultrasound and they put that wand in, and if you guys have ever had loss, I don't know. So, you know, when they put that wand in and they say no more heartbeat, or so she put the wand in, she was like, yeah, I can't even see anything where there was something before. I was like, yeah, okay, I figured. And then she goes, wait, what's over here? And she was like, something's still happening over here. And so she said, we'll keep an eye on this, but I'm seeing a flutter. There's something still happening over here. And so she just, so it was like one of those things like from The Princess Bride, good night, Wesley, good work, almost likely kill you in the morning. You know, that sort of thing. You most likely won't, this probably is not going to happen. And I still had to do the show. So,
oh my God.
How did you carry that with you while doing?
And no one knew yet at the theater.
No,
did you the stress of that during that time. Yeah. And you couldn't talk about it.
Did my who know?
Did your dresser know?
No one. I stayed super quiet because I just didn't think it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden I'd gotten past the first trimester, just every day, just being like, this is really still happening. And so that's when we finally had to let people know. We're like, believe it or not.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So then it was scary because it was about trying to, you know, be careful, carry this baby, do the show, take care of my responsibility to the show. And then my responsibility to this baby. And I had been on bed rest with my first child. I was on bed rest for 3 months with Zoe. I went into labor at 5.5 months pregnant with Zoe, and had to go to bed and lay in bed until I gave birth to her. So from, yeah, I guess October until February when I had her. No, yeah, November to February, I had to stay in bed. So
were you performing at the time when you were pregnant with Zoe?
I was on my way out the door to go to a concert, to get on a plane to fly to a concert in California. And
they said, no way, and lay down.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, so I can like reschedule the concert for a week from now. They're like, no, you can get up in February when she's due. I was like, I'm sorry, what? So we were worried that was going to happen again. So we had to monitor very carefully. So I had every band in the world on my belly while I was doing Shuffle Along. And,
yeah. Wow.
I know. If people only knew really what goes on, you know, in order to bring a baby into the world, and everybody has a different journey, obviously,
right.
But you know, the different things that you have to keep to yourself a lot and carry and
then suffer through.
Exactly. The emotional weight of it is tremendous.
Yeah.
Valley James, she wanted to be here, honey.
She sure did.
That's what we know more than anything in the world. That I had one good egg somewhere, like on a shelf in the back of my ovary that was like, oh, and she was like, oh no, I'm coming.
Yeah.
I had to figure out, but I'm coming. So yeah, no, she's a miracle baby for us for sure. And there was a time when, you know, because of Shuffle Along closing and me feeling like I've let people down, that I really had to, I've now put that way in the back of my head and my heart, because that's a life.
Yes.
That's a whole life. That is a whole soul that was meant to come to this planet and learn things and teach things. And, you know, a show is a show.
Yeah.
But for a while I felt a lot of responsibility about that. And that was hard.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, I think because you're a very empathetic person, human being, and being a mother and an artist, like we're just so in tune to those around us and to our own emotions. And I'm sure. And we always, you know, a show is a family, right? Like we have these people and I can only imagine the kind of responsibility that comes with being in your position and what that must have felt like. But I'm sure that there are those who will never understand because they have not had that experience.
Right.
But then there are those who love you and honor you and the experience and just motherhood in general who completely get it.
Yeah. The cast and the crew, I mean, I don't think anybody It was for me, it felt like, oh my gosh, this is a whole group of people that are now out of a job. And that was kind of hard to, it was hard to shoulders.
I'm sure. But you know what? The way of theater is, it might have gone for another couple months and then it might have ended. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's just like you, yeah, I'm so glad that you've released that. I'm sure it took a minute.
No, it did.
You can't carry that. Oh my God.
No. And not, you know, not when you're trying to nurture a life and
But I think that, you know, it's sort of, the way family is viewed in this business is not one of with respect. I don't think very often.
Really not prioritized, especially in a business where the family, you know, it was the men in the theater who, they would do the shows and they'd come home. Yeah. My wife, such and such. Or how many times did you meet someone when you were younger in the theater, a guy who's like, oh yeah, my wife used to be in the business. You hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, but she's at home with our kids, but she used to be in the business. And
I mean,
choice is choice. What you choose to do and how you choose to take care of and raise your children. I'm not judging that, but how many times would you see a woman who say, yeah, my husband used to be in the business, but now I'm the one doing it. And that's
nope.
Nope.
Flames.
When Jessica and I were at Jersey Boys, there were tons of fathers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, crawling with fathers. I was the first to have a baby and stay there and continue to work.
Well, and the show at that point had been running for almost 10 years.
You can't say Jersey Boys.
No, when I joined it, 5 years.
No, I mean like in the whole run of the show.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I mean, isn't that, and so many dads everywhere you look. Yeah. We all had a lot of advice, which was nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just bizarre.
Yeah, it really, to be the only one. I remember one person associated with Shuffle Along, when he found out it was closing, he's like, God, what am I going to do? I got kids. And I remember thinking, this is awful. I got kids too.
Yeah.
Not only that, but why didn't he connect the dots?
Yeah.
I got kids.
Well,
you're having a kid.
Yeah.
That's something is missing in that connection to me.
Yeah. I mean, I did it. I mean, it was an emotional reaction and he was like, oh God, what am I going to do? But I remember just going, And I just was like, I know this is hard, but in my mind, I was like, yeah, I have kids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the sensitivity chip, right? Oh, remember like Jennifer Aniston said, Brad Pitt was missing it. It's like a lot of men are missing that sensitivity chip where it all gets connected.
Yeah.
But that's part of why Kara and I started this podcast, you know, is truly to just have more of an awareness mm-hmm. that there are those of us who, you know, we're not carny folk anymore. Like, you know, going from town to town, setting up our tents and living out of a trailer. You know, it's like we are people, fully developed humans, raising humans, and we come with children. You know, it's not, we're not baggage. They're not baggage, I should say.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dory Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.